Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be reviewing Ron Shelton's 2003 film, Hollywood Homicide. Joining me here is Pat Miller, my good friend and roommate. Pat, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And joining me also is my regular co-host, Tyler Brands, the editor-in-chief of the Solar Sentinel. Tyler, what's up?
Benjamin, happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday to you, sir. Okay, so, you know, this is our third episode. Everybody should kind of be familiar with the format by now, but for those of you who may be just listening,
I'm not.
For the first time, well, we have a problem then because you're a co-host. So for those of you who are listening for the first time, what we generally like to do is go through what we call the media consumed section of the show, which is kind of a brief period where we just talk about what we've been watching in the TV world and then move on into our, you know, kind of review proper of the main movie that we're going to be talking about this week. So let's go ahead and jump right into the media consumed section. Tyler, what have you been watching this week?
Well, Ben, I've been watching a little show that's brand new to television. It's one of your TNT dramas that they chuck out every season. You know, you got a new one, you know, almost every day. I don't know.
Right.
Rizzoli and Isles. It takes place in Boston. So there's a lot of Irish Mick happenings going on. I think the main lady, Rizzoli, is like a tomboy cop. And Dr. Isles is like a Spock character who only knows science and can't interact with other people, you know. And Donnie Wahlberg was on it for a couple episodes. I don't know if he's going to be returning as a main character, but I really liked his character. He was like the chief of police.
Okay.
And you know, it's your procedural drama, cop drama with a little bit of a little too much girly drama going on. Like, she has problems with her mother and men and stuff. I don't really care for that part, but the women are pretty attractive, and the crimes are adequate, so I check it out. So yeah, it's pretty good.
What makes the show different from any of the other TNT cop drama? I mean, there's so many police procedural shows on TV right now. The ones that I like to watch have some sort of spin to them, like Lie to Me or like Justified or something. Like, they've got to be a little bit different for them to pique my interest. Otherwise, it's just another, you know, NCIS or Law and Order or something. So it's not really
like a CSI, because CSIs are like, those are like to the point procedural, where they don't even deal with like character drama or like love affairs between the cops, or it's all about like the science and solving the crime and all this stuff. TNT is more, I don't watch the rest of the cop dramas on TNT, so I don't know how it compares to like Leverage and Memphis Beat and Deep Blue Water or whatever. Deep Blue Sea. I don't know what it's called, but, I think they just take place in different cities with different characters. I'm gonna assume they're all in the same universe. I think Memphis Beat has that guy that played the demon in Dogma. I can't think of it.
Jason Lee.
Yeah, Jason Lee. And you know, he's like, it was. I think that one may be the stupidest one on the air, because I don't know, just the way they talked about it. He's like, he's a cop, but he really likes rhythm and blues, and like all this works in together because he's in Memphis. And I was like, they're forcing it.
Yeah.
But Rizzoli and Isles is pretty much like the stereotypical Boston cop drama.
Okay.
So TNT is pretty much like, what do you want to watch? They have something for you, I guess.
Okay. All right. I like it. Pat, what have you been watching lately? Anything in particular?
Well, I've been watching a little show called Mad Men, which just had its season premiere last week. I thought it was a good starting episode. Not a whole lot happened. It was more obviously for establishing stuff. You know, we got to look at the new Sterling Draper Price.
Yes.
Which I just like saying, and B, it was pretty cool to just see, you know, what the new offices were like. I was reading the episode description of this week's episode coming up today, Sunday, and it's a Christmas party episode, but they said like an unexpected, unwanted guest arrives or something. So I'm interested to see who that's gonna be. Like,
right.
From the past, Sterling Cooper, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm interested to see that. I've been watching Entourage as well, which you know, I've heard out there some people have asked the question whether the show has, quote, jumped the shark.
Right. For those of you who don't know, jumping the shark is a phrase that kind of originated in pop culture with Happy Days, where I believe Fonzie literally is skiing on the, like, behind the surface of a boat, you know, on the water or something, and literally, like, jumps over a shark, and the whole ridiculous aspect of it kind of led people to say, okay, this is where the show has clearly hit its bottom. You know, it's on the downturn, on the way out. More recently, the term nuked the fridge has come into play because of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, in which Harrison Ford's character actually climbs into a refrigerator and survives a nuclear blast. Similar type thing. So that's what Pat means when he refers to jumping the shark for the uninitiated out there. But continue.
Yeah, I mean, I hate that term, but it's what they use. But so anyways, yeah, back to Entourage. I feel like the show, I still have hope for it. I don't want to say it's completely not worth watching. But that being said, I think this could be a throwaway season. Just Vince's storyline is really non-existent. I mean, he's a crazy actor. Like, okay, we've seen that before. And the people I really care about are like Turtle. That's who I've cared about in the last two seasons. Turtle and I guess Drama to a lesser extent. So,
yeah. I mean, Vince's storyline right now is they're at least throwing him something slightly different because he's got this kind of adrenaline fueled action junkie thing going on right now. So, I mean, that's the kind of underlying thing that Vince is dealing with in every episode is like the competition between Eric and Scott Kahn's character, right?
Yes. Scott is also his name.
Right. So, and he is like, you know, this also kind of an adrenaline junkie. So there's a little bit of drama there between those characters,
yeah,
and stuff. And Vince, you know, kind of stepping out and not playing it safe when he's got obviously his career to think about and things like that. So, I mean, they're giving Vince a little bit of stuff, but I see what you're saying. There's not a lot to latch onto there.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, what's there is uninteresting in my opinion.
Yeah.
But that being said, the last episode was the best of the season, I think. It was the fourth episode. I don't remember the title. It was the most enjoyable of the season, probably because it focused on Turtle and drama.
All right. Well, I have been watching not much. I mean, we talked last week about how I just got, you know, came back from Comic-Con and stuff, so I've just kind of been playing catch-up with stuff that I've missed. One thing that I did want to talk about was Lie to Me. We kind of mentioned the show tangentially in the past. I'm a huge fan of the show on Fox, and I know Tyler, you are as well.
Hell yeah.
I watched the two most recent episodes, one titled Delinquent. This is the one where
that one was hot.
Well, we'll debate that in just a second. This is the one where Torres, who's one of the kind of secondary characters, her sister is, you know, charged with a murder, and she's kind of in, you know, broken out of this juvenile detention facility and all this stuff. I actually thought this was one of the worst episodes of the entire run of the show. I mean, it's in its second season right now. There was just everything about it, from the dialogue, which was completely pedestrian in every way and just very by the numbers, to just the storyline was like, none of this matters at all. The entire time I was sitting there, I was like, this is a throwaway episode. This means nothing. That no real character development is going on. We've seen Torres and, you know, being broken down before and her relationship with Lightman and stuff, but there's one scene, I believe, in this episode where Torres gets drunk and shows up at Lightman's house and is like talking to Emily, the daughter, and it's just, I don't know. Tyler, what did you think about this episode? You saw it, right?
Oh yeah.
You classified it earlier as hot. What do you mean by that?
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand.
Well, you know, Torres, originally I didn't find Torres that attractive as a character or as a physical being, but it's, you know, over the course of the show, I guess I've grown attached to the character, even though she's you know, makes appearances briefly sometimes. Throwaway episode, it developed a character pretty well, I guess, and it kind of showed like the acting capabilities of Kelly Williams as Dr. Foster when she got like just man slapped in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And you know, was like pretty torn up about that. And but I guess as an audience member, we're still looking for that Foster Lightman relationship to, you know, and you just keep getting dealt this scene. Platonic
right.
love,
yeah.
where he's kind of there for her, but he's still like messing around with these other women. But at the same time, I really enjoy that. So they shouldn't force the relationship too soon, because I like Cal as the playboy scientist.
Yeah, the kind of rogue,
more badass than like your Horatio Caine or any of those other guys that flagship these drama shows that you see all the time. So keep it up.
Yeah.
Do you like that one?
Speaking
the
of
politician.
Right, yeah. Speaking of Lightman being this kind of rogue womanizer or whatever, Melissa George, who's an actress that I've, you know, been familiar with for a long time, she was in Alias. She was actually in a really great movie called Triangle that was kind of a mind bender, so I'd recommend checking that out. I believe it's on Netflix. So check that out if you guys are interested in Melissa George's work. She gives a really great performance in that. But anyway, she was introduced this season as kind of a love interest / business partner for Lightman and the Lightman Group. And I've been wondering what they were going to do with her character, because they have been playing her up kind of as this love interest. And you know that she's not going to stick around forever. So I've been wondering how they were going to kind of organize her exit from the show. And they actually did that in this most recent episode, which is called Bullet Bump. I think it's the 17th episode of the season or something. But in any case,
Bullet Bump.
This episode was a lot better than the one before. This is actually, you know, one of the better episodes, I think. It's kind of why I watched the show. There's a lot of different, the show, I'm trying to characterize this in a fair way. It's a relatively new show, but you can already see that they're kind of reaching for storylines and scenarios and things. Like, they've already relied on, you know, an Iraq war thing. They've most recently done this political thing. In the preview for the next one, they go to a street fight and think, you know, they're just kind of grasping for scenarios at where a bunch of people are going to see things differently, and Lightman basically has to kind of figure out the truth in the situation. So I don't know how much longer the show is going to be on the air, but I'm loving it while it is. You know, this political episode, I thought for what that was, which was basically just kind of a gimmicky episode about a politician and assassination and things like that, I thought they handled it really well. I thought the writing was good. And I also enjoyed the kind of aside with Locher and Emily with the, you know,
that's because you like Emily.
Well, I like Locher too. I do like almost all of the supporting characters in Lie to Me, but I like seeing Locher when he's not just teaming up with Torres, and they're like kind of their banter is not one of my favorite parts of the show, and I feel like they don't really do justice to those characters when they team them up and then just leave them out in the cold like that. But when they do interesting things with the character, like they did when, you know, in the episode before with Torres and her sister, or with this one where Locher is doing his own thing kind of off on their own, when they separate them and don't just kind of lazily lump them in as a group unit, that's where I think, you know, my enjoyment comes, seeing those characters kind of act independently of one another. But
I thought the politician was originally John Wesley Snipes from the Flash series, but
I mean John Wesley Shipp, I believe.
That's it. Although I don't think it was.
No,
unless it was, and I was proven incorrect.
It absolutely was not. But
it looked like him though.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Well, I don't read any of the. I usually don't read the like guest starring credits at the beginning of the show, so I'm just kind of like making a, you know, just being like, oh yeah, that's the guy from The Flash.
Yeah. Okay, so that'll wrap up our media consume section. Why don't we go ahead and move on into our review of Hollywood Homicide. Pat, why don't we start with you? What did you, just kind of brief thoughts, you know, just opening thoughts, if you will. What did you think about this movie?
I would say it's not a terrible movie. I definitely enjoyed it. I would say it was 50-50. I enjoyed it. Maybe less than that. Maybe 45-55. 55%, I was kind of like, okay, this is a little corny. But the other 45%, I was maybe enjoying it. And then we'll get into the issues, I guess. But, you know, that's my general consensus of it.
Okay, Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, as far as a Harrison Ford movie, for the 2000s, it was pretty standard. I've seen Firewall and all those other kind of crappy movies that he made. But I guess I agree with Pat. I mean, it wasn't unwatchable. I wasn't like, oh, my God, when is this going to be over? But, yeah, there were definitely some discrepancies that I need to bring up to just, you know, because, yeah, go with that for now.
Fair enough. Yes, I'm kind of right there with you guys, actually. I remember seeing this in theaters when it came out in 2003 and remember it being pretty average back then. And then when the old Deus Ex Machina machine, the old Apple II, brought it up for us last week, I was like, okay, we're going to go down a little trip down memory lane here and see if this is actually as average as I remember it being. And it was. So, you know, like you guys said, it's definitely not unwatchable. But it is kind of painfully average at points. you guys seem to have some specific issues that you would like to bring up, so go ahead and do that. Either one of you, whoever wants to start, let's get into it.
Okay. Well, I didn't have like a problem with Harrison Ford as much. What's the name? Josh Hartnett's kind of boring.
Do you mean in general or just in this movie?
No, in this movie. Okay. I don't know. Maybe in general, but in this movie, definitely. What I couldn't figure out, this is kind of just a weird point, I couldn't understand why there were so many cameos from like music artists, like musicians and R&B singers and rappers and whatever, like soul artists. I don't know. Like, why is Smokey Robinson driving a taxi? I just didn't understand that.
I don't know if
I don't understand that either.
I don't know if I could directly answer the question, but I think, I mean, like, the movie is kind of a blending between this kind of buddy cop action comedy thing, and then also it's set in this world of the music industry and the kind of recording artists, and in the very beginning a rap group is murdered, and that's kind of the major mystery that needs to be solved, you know, throughout.
But the Motown references, Ben. The Motown.
Right, yeah.
How does that work in?
Harrison Ford loves Motown. That's all we need to know, apparently. You know, a lot of that stuff is very inexplicable. But I think, you know, you want to compare this movie to something like Be Cool, where that movie is also like is very entrenched in the music industry. Do you guys remember that movie, the John Travolta? It's the sequel to Get Shorty. Tyler, did you ever see that?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I'm the only one here who saw that. But in any case, that movie also has, you know, a lot of characters from or cameos from famous people in the music industry. This one, I don't know. It didn't seem like a high profile enough project to kind of warrant all of those people coming through, like especially for their characters, because all of those cameos could have just been played by anybody. There was no reason for Gladys Knight to be the mother of one of the troubled youngsters. You know, like there's, I don't know who pulled the favors or what happened here with the casting department. Or if these people were just like hurting for a paycheck or something, but so there definitely was a lot of involvement from, you know, kind of big figures in the music industry there. Tyler, what kind of stuff did you want to bring up?
Well, it's not only the cameos, it's these two guys, Ford and Hartnett, they're like the worst cops in the department. I mean, they're doing all this other stuff on the side when they should be, you know, focusing on this case. And then, so, like, the case is actually trying to solve itself, where they're like, the phones are going off all the time. Otherwise, they would have never solved anything if all these things weren't happening.
Like,
Ford or Gavlin, moonlights as a real estate agent, and he's making bids on his phone while chasing bad guys. And then Hartnett is like this, you know, new age,
yoga
fruity
instructor,
actor, wannabe yoga instructor. And he's like, I don't know, he can't shoot. You know, he doesn't really focus on solving the crime. And then there's this whole thing with his dad, and it's just kind of, you're just kind of like, all right, maybe this guy who wrote the movie was like, I'm going to write a cop movie or something, you know, and he just kind of used all these cliches. And,
yeah.
Yeah, and then tried to make it his own by making them kind of different characters, which is all right, I guess, but it was a little outlandish.
Yeah, I mean, you can absolutely tell. You can... Nice. A little reference to episode 2 there for those of you listening along. That's great. We need to do that every time we say the word outlandish from now on. Sorry, I don't even remember what I was saying now. The Sean Connery voice distracted me. Right. Well, in any case, you know, you were talking about how just completely inept these characters are, and I think Harrison Ford especially is playing kind of against type. He is known for these kind of dapper, you know, Han Solo and, you know, these badass characters that he plays. And this one, he really is just kind of a bumbling buffoon, like wandering around. You know, he's got all of his money tied up in this property that he's trying to sell. And he's just like completely distracted the entire movie by these other things that he's got going on. And like you were saying, I think the movie's very formulaic. The guy who wrote it, Ron Shelton, actually wrote and directed this, but he, I think he was doing exactly what you're talking about. Just wanted to make this type of movie and used all the cliches and then just kind of twisted the character slightly, just to put another spin on it. But it, when you step back and look at the final product and what these characters are supposed to be doing, which is solving a quadruple murder, and what they actually end up doing, it's not realistic at all. It's not even,
yeah.
And you know, I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that every single movie has to be realistic, especially when it involves police officers or anything like that, but make it entertaining. And the only thing, I mean, you mentioned Harrison Ford's cell phone earlier. He's got My Girl as a ringtone. His character's phone rings more than any other phone in any movie in history, I think. It rings
more than cellular.
Yeah, no, way more than cellular. And
that movie's about a phone.
Right, exactly. So, it got really annoying. There's a sequence that Pat and I were watching this. There's a sequence where there's an interrogation scene, and Harrison Ford and Josh Hartnett are locked up in two separate rooms. This is near the end of the movie, and Ford's phone keeps going off, and a guy who's played by Bruce Greenwood, who's kind of like the overseer at the police force, who really kind of wants to take down Harrison Ford's character because he embarrassed him in years past. Anyway, you know the kind of archetype. In any case, he's standing there watching through the two glass windows at these two cops trying to be interrogated, and Ford's phone goes off probably 20 times inside there, and he's just like looking around to no one, just exclaiming, you know, in an exasperated tone, like, "What? How does he have his phone? Somebody take that away from him!" Like, he's not doing anything. And Pat looked over at me during that scene. He goes, "This is going on way too long." That scene ran probably, you know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes too long. We got the joke early, and they just stretched it out. I have no idea why.
And then they just let them go, and we don't hear anything about it until the very end.
Yeah, I mean, that's
when Mako's arrested.
That's kind of what this entire movie is. Like, you know, these people were shot and killed, but their deaths don't really mean anything. It's just a catalyst to kind of get the guys going, get them moving. And then at the very, very end, I'm going to spoil something.
Been out for like 7 years. It's okay.
I know, but I'm just throwing that out there. If you guys want to go into Hollywood Homicide unspoiled, stop listening now and come back and pick up from this point. But Harrison Ford's character gets in that fight sequence with what is his name? Anthony Sartain at the very
Dr. Burke.
And they're like on the top of a building, and Harrison Ford essentially just throws him over the top of a building. Like, I looked at Pat, I was like, is that murder? Can that be construed as murder? Because there's no, I mean, he didn't have to do that. He could have just shot him in the leg or something.
Right. That was my problem, because they never really did solve the crime. I mean, the mom said, oh yeah, you know, he probably just killed that band because they were trying to get out of the contract. And Ford and Hartnett are like, okay, yeah, that's a pretty good theory. Let's act on that. And then they find the guys in the street, and they just run, and like nobody ever confesses or
right.
says anything. And so he just tosses them from the building. I'm like, he didn't even say anything, but and you know, Hartnett solved like the 20-year-old crime, but they didn't,
yeah.
they really didn't solve the unless the old man confessed, which
yeah.
we don't. So it goes unsolved in my eyes.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, they just took that woman at her word. She could have
yeah.
made up that entire thing, and they did no fact-checking. They did no police detective work. They did nothing. They were like, okay. And then, yeah, like you were saying, you know, this huge chase scene ensues, which was actually, you know, competently shot, well done. I mean, the movie as a whole, I think, is like, technically very watchable. It's you know, well executed and stuff. There's nothing crazy as far as directorial flourishes or anything. There's no John Woo pigeons or anything. This guy, I mean, the director, he knows what he's doing, but he doesn't add anything really special to it. But, you know, that being said, it's a competent movie. But, you know, that they go to, I don't even know. I don't even know where I'm going with this, but, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead.
Yeah. It's just kind of like I don't know if it's a comedy or an action movie. I don't really know for sure. I think it's more comedy than anything. And, you know, Ford was doing stuff like 6 days, seven nights and all these kind of goofy, you know, not like his action hero character, you know.
Right.
He was trying to do these goofy movies where he's trying to break his mold. And, you know, it was all right, I guess. I mean... that's pretty much all, you know, it's all right.
I remember what I was going to say. The okay. We were talking about the chase scene earlier and how the cops, you know, didn't do any real detective work. They go on that
right.
chase at the very end. Ford ends up fighting Anthony Sartain on the rooftop, and then he just throws him off the roof. And like you said, Sartain doesn't confess to the crime. Normally in movies like this, the bad guys will – you know, actually confess
right.
to it, even if it's only to the hero right before their death,
which is
kind of like what happened in the Josh Hartnett kind of B story when he was off on that separate chase because he ended up recording that entire conversation, which everybody saw coming, you know, from a mile away. And then, but the Harrison Ford, like A story didn't like, there was no resolution to that at all. So
yeah,
you're absolutely right. The case really did kind of go unsolved. And then they were just like, all right, like dusting their hands off and then moving on to another case in the credit sequence. And you're like, okay, I guess nobody really cares about this at all. But
I mean, you guys bring up a good point. Like Sartain, the primary bad guy was, I didn't see him in the movie. I don't remember being in the movie a whole lot. Like, they don't really show him. We're just, like, automatically supposed to hate him. Like, really no motivation besides just, like, yeah, what people have said. Like, okay, yeah, he's trying to get out of the contract, so he shot him. But we don't see him really do a lot of bad stuff. Like, they torch that car in the beginning. And
there's
I guess
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I guess it's just
that's freedom of expression.
Yeah.
Right? You own that.
Well, speaking of
What happened to those kids under contract with them? I mean, now that this guy's dead, like all these rap artists are out of work. I mean, it's really a tragedy if you think about it. The whole thing. You know, Sartain dies, no confession, no one knows why. These guys that got murdered, you know, they never really prove that they were killed by Sartain. It's just kind of hearsay.
Yeah, there's a lot of loose ends left in this film. But you guys were talking about...
Said that. Go ahead.
Well, okay, yeah, you guys were talking about the villain earlier. I mean, Dwight Yoakam, who was featured in this film for, what, two or three scenes total, was also supposed to be, you know, this kind of really evil bad guy. And they basically just relied on the fact that he looks like a bad guy. Like, he physically does resemble what you would assume a bad guy to look like. And they did show him torching that car. But he was just criminally underused in this movie. I mean, he's actually a pretty good actor. I mean, he was the doctor in Crank. And he can play these types of movies. He doesn't have to be in, like, these kind of prestigious, you know, Oscar movies or anything, but he knows his limitations, I guess, as an actor, or where he fits in well with these kind of genre picks and stuff. And I think he would have been great had they just concentrated all of the energy of the villain on him or something, or, you know, picked one or the other and developed the villain, you know, a little bit, as opposed to just having these two guys who we're supposed to hate for no other reason than they're villains. But
I really enjoyed the scene that featured Corrupt, you know, as Cairo. I mean, no one can pedal a self-propelled boat like Corrupt can. I really liked how you don't really know, like, what that was the point where you're just like, really, is this happening? Like, they're chasing him back and forth between this creek with the bridge. Harrison Ford's driving the car around, and you know, it's Ludacris is playing in the background, and you're just like, this is clearly filler.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what you're talking about, where all the cliches come to come to rise, because you've got these kind of beats that you need to hit with an action comedy buddy cop movie like this, and chase sequences are one of them. But the same way that Ron Shelton kind of put this little spin on the main characters, he also put his little spin on these chase sequences, because, like you said, he gets into a paddle boat at one point. There's another time where Harrison Ford tries to steal a car, and the guy gets out, and he's like, no, get out of here, leave me alone. And then he steals a little girl's bike and starts that through the streets. And then, you know, similarly, at that same time, Josh Hartnett's character hijacks a van with a family in it, and they're screaming at him the entire time. You know,
just terrible.
It's these kinds of things that happen in cop movies all the time, where people, you know, stop, it's the police, and I need to grab your car and use this for a chase. But the Shelton decided, oh yeah, I'm gonna try to switch things up a little bit here. And I don't really know what effect that was. I think it was more like eye rolling than anything else. Everybody's just like, really, this is happening right now? Okay.
Have they solved the crime yet? I don't know. There's only 10 minutes left. We can do it.
Right.
Although with all the bad things we're saying, though, the dialogue, though, I mean, that's kind of what kept it going. It wasn't like there weren't bad one-liners. There wasn't like flat acting or anything. I mean, they all kind of pulled their characters' lines together pretty coherently. And as clumsy as Harrison Ford's character was, I mean, he was a guy that was doing real estate on the side of his cop job, and he needed money, and you could believe that he was struggling for money, you know, and it was like his car getting repossessed, and he wanted it to get stolen because it was insured, because he wanted the insurance money. I just thought that kind of stuff was, and then like when he was going up the elevator to fetch Sardane, and he's like finalizing the deal in this elevator full of women. He's just like bloodied and battered, and he's like, I'm a real estate agent. And walking out the door.
Yeah, I think you're right. They did a fairly decent job of avoiding gratuitous one-liners. I mean, there was a scene that I already spoiled at the very end where he throws Sartain off the roof and he lands in a garbage disposal, like a dumpster. And and I looked over at Pat. I was like, oh, he's gonna say it. He's gonna be like, I was just taking out the trash or something like that. But you know, they kind of showed a little bit of self-restraint there, and not, you know, didn't have him deliver any kind of crazy dialogue like that. But
although they didn't have any restraint with the worst love scene in cinematic history, with Harrison Ford and aviators riding the girl while eating a donut.
Yeah, that was really
the only thing
that was disturbing.
I think she said specifically, though, no donuts, and then the next scene there are donuts. I mean, I don't know why she just didn't walk away. I don't know why the audience didn't walk away, but I mean, she specifically said no donuts.
Yeah. Oh, the intricacies of love scenes in Hollywood Homicide. That's what we're talking about now. Oh man, I guess that's pretty much it as far as the stuff that I just wanted to bring up about this movie. There's not a lot to grasp on here. There's some decent writing, decent acting. Oh, one more thing that I did want to talk about real quick before we kind of wrap this up is Josh Hartnett. And I think, you know, you guys know that I love Josh Hartnett because I'm a huge fan of Lucky Number 11. This movie, I think he plays a cop who doesn't want to be a cop, who wants to be an actor. And the kind of, like you were talking about, Tyler, the kind of like new agey stuff that he was into and his whole yoga thing. I think he was kind of poking fun at himself and at, you know, younger actors that are about his age, you know, and the kind of new wave of Hollywood and how like over analytical everybody is and all this kind of stuff. And I think he was having a lot of fun with this movie. I don't necessarily know if people kind of caught on to that or if they were just like, just took his performance for what it was on the surface. But I mean, I saw a little bit of a spark in there, just as him being knowledgeable, at least about what kind of performance he was giving. I thought, did you guys pick up on that, or were you just like, okay, this is just him kind of mailing it in?
Go ahead,
Tyler.
I just think he was getting a lot of action on set because, you know, those yoga classes had a lot of attractive women and, you know, Josh Hartnett's hanging out in between scenes and, you know, I'd be happy doing that role too. So, you know, that's all I have to say about that.
That never occurred to me, but, I guess earlier when I said Josh Hartnett was boring, what I meant to say was his character was boring, but that being said, I didn't see it as him making fun of his perceived self in real life, which I guess makes it a little bit more interesting of a performance.
Well, I mean, there's that, and the only reason that I kind of make that correlation is because of how bumbling Harrison Ford's character was, and I feel like that was him, you know, kind of playing against type and things like that, and Hartnett, who at the time had been cast in, Pearl Harbor and these kinds of... Right. He was very much on the rise, very much being, you know, kind of taken seriously as, you know, one of the next big things. And that hasn't necessarily panned out for him very well. But in 2003, he didn't know that was going to be the case. So I feel like he was just kind of taking this role as an opportunity to kind of have a little bit of fun in between these, you know, ostensibly serious films that he was supposed to be doing at the time to kind of build his reputation or whatever. But... I don't know. This entire movie was just basically like a fluff piece to me. There's not a lot going on under the surface. And
well, the same could be said for Harrison Ford. I mean, this is probably like something he did for fun. You know, he's always doing these serious government agent movies.
Yeah, no, and, absolutely. I think
his family's getting kidnapped, and he's always like the you know, it's he probably got this script, and he's like, finally, I get to play like a single guy who's, you know, a cop. He plays, you know, he does all this goofy stuff. He's kind of funny. You know, I kind of understand what you're trying to say with like the actors having fun with these roles. So yeah. I guess if you look at the movie through those eyes, like seeing it as like these two, Ford and Hartnett, like having fun with a cop movie, it kind of puts a different spin on all the ridiculous stuff that happens.
Yeah.
We were just kind of like, oh, well, yeah, I guess that's pretty funny.
Right. Well, Pat,
we should have watched...
What's that,
sorry.
Tyler?
We should have watched Hollywoodland and made this like a Hollywood... I think that would have been... We should save that for another episode, because I was just thinking like, oh, Hollywood-themed movie. Well, then I thought of Hollywoodland with Adrian Brody and the George Reeves murder.
Right.
Case. It's not along the same vein at all as far as genre, but it does take place in Hollywood, so.
Yeah, I like that idea. We'll do a double feature Hollywood themed thing one of these episodes. So
I thought it was up to the Deus Ex Machina machine.
Well, you know, hopefully we can program it to kind of
Oh no, it's completely random. Yeah, I'm just hoping that one day it just happens to land on Hollywood land.
Curse you for breaking our secret, sir. In any case, Pat, would you recommend this movie to your friends?
I would say if you're watching TNT and it comes on, maybe just use it as like a B show, you know, like while your A show has a commercial. Go ahead and flip.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. That's a little harsh. If it were to come on TV, maybe like sit around and watch it. But I don't know. Don't go out of your way to see it, I don't think.
I pretty much mirror those sentiments. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, if you're a Harrison Ford fan, there's a lot of Harrison Ford. If you're a Josh Hartnett fan, there's a lot of Josh Hartnett. But if you're like a cop movie fan, this is probably going to have a lot of holes in it for you. So it all depends on what you're trying to watch.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Tyler, why don't you go ahead and fire up the Deus Ex Machina and kick on that old Apple II and see what we're going
to do. Oh, yeah, no problem. It's warming up. It's warming up. Here we go. Here we go. All right, it looks like the machine is bringing up Excalibur, a 1981 fantasy King Arthur epic. IMDb says it's up 1% in popularity this week. So, yeah, Ben, this randomization is really bringing us down, I think.
Man, I don't know about this one, but yeah, if you guys want to listen in, check it out, Excalibur, watch it on Netflix or something, rent it.
Yeah, it's on Instant Watch, you can watch it. It's about, I think it may be like two and a half hours long, so it's going to be, either going to be really awesome or just a really boring movie.
Well, throw it on in the background while you're cleaning your apartment or something, and then you can listen to our podcast and listen to us discuss it next week, but... in any case, I would like to thank Pat and Tyler for joining us on another episode of the Not Just New Movies podcast this week.
Glad to be here, as always.
Tyler?
Thank you.
All right, that's what I'm talking about.
Every time. Sorry, I'm starting to fall asleep.
Music for our show comes courtesy of George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com. They're also on Facebook and Twitter. Check them out. Pretty awesome blues stuff that you guys hear opening and closing the show. Okay, so one thing we like to do at the very end of every episode is just kind of talk about where people can find our work on the internet. So, Pat Miller, where can people find you online?
You can find me online at the-life-after.blogspot.com. I've got all my Life After episodes up on there, so check it out.
And Tyler Brands.
Yes, you can find me as Alan Treherne on GeekTyrant.com. I write a weekly comic book article that I don't think anybody reads, so it's getting shorter by the week. I usually put in some funny stuff, and I Photoshop some pictures to make the week go by a little faster. I also write the SolarSentinel.blogspot.com. It's a blog that I also write for reviews of music and books and all kinds of stuff. And so you're more than welcome to head on over there and comment and check it out. So.
Excellent. You guys can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/BenPairs. That's BenPears. You can also find me at notjustnewmovies.blogspot.com, which is the kind of namesake for this podcast. And I am a contributing editor over at geektyrant.com. And a writer for filmonic.com as well. And then finally, you can track me down on Tumblr at benpears.tumblr.com. That's Media Consumed, the kind of TV blog that I started a little while back. So that'll about do it for us. So thanks again. That was our talk about Hollywood Homicide. And we will see you guys next week with our review of Excalibur. One more thing that I just remembered. Please feel free to email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Let us know your opinions, whatever, about whatever movies we've been talking about or suggestions for things.
We will rate it on the air.
For us to watch in the future. Yeah, we'll try to plug it into the Deus Ex Machina and see what we can do as far as that goes. And yes, as Tyler says, we will read things on the air, especially since nobody has emailed us yet, and this is our third episode. So
we're going to have to start signing up for like website newsletters just so we start getting stuff. And
right, yeah, I will read junk mail on the air. If it comes to our inbox, I'll read it. So thanks again for listening, you guys, and we will see you next week. I've got the blues. I've got the blues, really. I got the blues, yeah. I got the blues real bad. I done lost my baby. She spent all the money that I had. I tried to call. See you.